Welcome to Outspoken, where we dive deep into the topics and intersection of technology, money, business, and passion. I'm your host, Shayna Cosgrove.
I had a limiting belief around I'm not good enough to get out and speak. And even though I had spoken to CEOs of $2 billion companies, that was a script. Now I'm going out and speaking to groups and like, I'm not good enough. Why would anybody want to listen to me? Let's talk about what can you do, not what can't you do to move things along. So action and accountability is very important to me rather than just merely exploring things. If I was going to continue growing my business, I had to fake it till I made it. And so you may internally be thinking, you know, life is not quite where I want it, and I'm going to think about what life looks like when it is where I want it. Today, I am here with my personal business coach, Susan Katz. You know, I grew up in the 80s, and no one could ever ignore the Chicago Bulls. It was a team effort, and it was a consistent team effort, and they had an amazing coach, and that really stuck with me. So I was aware of the quote, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I had this idea that I could use a coach, and I interviewed several different people, but none really sat with me well or I thought would be a good match until I met Susan. Now, Susan came and met me for probably, I think, a two-hour lunch. She let me tell my whole sob story. At the time, it was a sob story. And then she flattered me and said something like, you're going to go really far. And I was like, all right, I don't know if I'm going to hire this lady because she's flattering me, you know, because flattery, by the way, gets you everywhere. Flattery always works. But I also viewed it as an experiment. I had a bucket of money and we gave all of our employees about $5,000 to do in development for themselves, whether it be actual classes through university or work at home classes. And so I viewed it as an experiment. I think I signed up for 3 sessions with you.
Mm-hmm.
And Now we're going on how many years?
At least 2 to 3. I've lost count.
But it's no longer a sob story, which is the major progress we have. So Susan, why don't you tell us first, where are you? I'm in my house in Baltimore. Now, where are you?
I am in my house in Mississippi. My husband and I have 2 homes. And thanks to COVID, I have actually come down and spent a lot more time in Mississippi, which is a nice quiet, compared to living in Baltimore City, where our other house is, it's a nice quiet environment. And I'm working virtually from Clinton, Mississippi, town of about 30,000 people.
And is this where your husband grew up?
Yes, my husband grew up in Mississippi. He's traveled a lot, but he grew up in Mississippi, and it's definitely a calmer way of living.
Now, can you describe your business to us?
So as a executive business coach, leadership development, I work with business owners like you. That's a large part of who I work with, business owners, executives, and teams. And I've worked with your team as well. With the business owners, primarily to help them work on the business, not in it. I think of myself more as a behavior change expert because it's the small changes that you make when you are working and running your business. It's small changes and mindset shifts, behavior changes that really make a difference in how the business operates. So a good example of that would be a business owner who gets into business and feels like they've got to do everything. And at the beginning of a business, you do. You don't have the resources, the financial resources to hire other people. And so you get used to just handling everything rather than at some point there's a shift when you do have the financial resources and you can hire other people and delegate. So a behavior change would be the delegation aspect of it that becomes really important to growing your business.
Can you describe what a typical engagement with your clients looks like?
Yeah, there are a number of different engagements. I work with individuals, like I work with you, where we meet monthly and we prep for what you want to have a conversation about. You end up at the end of a session with commitments, and the accountability is a big piece of what we do. I also work with CEO groups where CEOs come together and they share challenges and topics and opportunities and help each other. And then I'd go in and do team engagements, getting people focused, getting people to create greater awareness of how they communicate and interact as a team. So a variety of things. I like variety. So it's great because I get to work in a variety of different situations.
Now, do you mainly support CEOs or do you do a mixture of executives as well?
It's a mix, although I would say that the bulk of the business are presidents and CEOs. So for instance, one of my more notable clients that I've been working with for over 10 years is the business team of the Baltimore Ravens. And so they're really great at giving their people an opportunity to develop. I'll meet with, generally it's a 3 to 4 hour a month with different people. People will get 2 to 4 sessions over the course of the year. So I would consider that the more executive engagement. They're people, managers, executives. They're a wonderful organization and wonderful client, and they have great leadership. I like to work with high performers, high potential, people like you who I know are going places. And sometimes there are organizations that have people that are really good technically and have difficulty getting along in the organization. The challenges often come with communication and social interaction. So I'll get called in and do an engagement. And thankfully, knock on wood, I've had a lot of success in those situations. I always start with having a conversation with the person the organization wants to be coached to make sure that I believe that they're coachable. And if I believe they're coachable when I get off that first phone call, then I'll take on the engagement.
I want to ask you 2 questions from what you just said. Number one, how do you determine if someone is coachable?
I think it's people being open to feedback and being willing to make change. And so through a series of questions, when I engage with somebody, they'll give me their sob story because everybody's got a sob story when they first talk to me. You're not the only one. I would say that, you know, 99.9% come with sob stories. And then I ask questions and I use that as an opportunity through the questions to redirect. And generally from that conversation, even though we haven't started formal coaching, there will be some actions that they've come out with of things that they can do going forward, that they commit to do going forward. If they're willing to do that, that says to me that they are coachable. And in most cases, people want to succeed. They just don't always have the knowledge or the resources to know how to shift their behavior. This is where the behavior change really comes into play. How to shift that behavior, because nobody in the organization is ever really focused on that. And it's hard to be completely open and honest with a colleague, a superior. They don't have anyone that they can talk to help them really redirect and think about a new way, reframe their behavior, come up with a new behavior that they can be using to be more effective. So it really comes down to, what are the changes that you need to make in order to be more effective? We're either ineffective or we're effective. And when you're not being effective, what do you you've got to change something because your current habits and behavior are not serving you well.
When you interview those people or talk to them for the first time, are they upset that they're finding out that they need to be coached? Like, how many people are surprised that they are ineffective?
Well, the company doesn't frame it that way. Generally, coaching is an investment. When a company is willing to invest in an employee to help them get better, they're doing it because they want the employee to get better. And so I ask them to frame it that way because that's what they are doing. So most of the people come to it, I think, with some degree of skepticism. And probably because of the conversation I've had with their leadership, they actually do see it as a great opportunity to work on themselves. They are people who are coachable or have been and want to do better. And I've had some great success stories. I remember somebody who was with a law firm who was having a real challenge getting along with one of her colleagues, another attorney. And through a series of maybe 6 coaching sessions, I, to this day, that was over 10 years ago. And the person who runs the firm, when I see her at a networking event, she comes up to me and she goes, "She's just doing so great, this person that I worked with. She's just doing so great." So that's great. That's very gratifying for me because I've been able to really help somebody permanently change some habits that has helped them to be more effective.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons I hired you was also I work with my husband. Mm-hmm. And my husband is a high performer with very different personality and execution than me. And while he may be right about certain things about me and how I operate, it is hard to listen to him and vice versa. So I always knew from the beginning that we needed essentially a third partner or someone who wasn't as wrapped up as tightly as the two of us were in the business. So I remember we had you come in for a coaching session with the executive team. And it was the first time, because we were finally at a level where we could actually afford to take that time together to operate. And it felt like group therapy. I think one of the nice things we did actually was start with the really positive things that we thought about each other. And we were surprised at the depth of feeling of that positive nature. And I think it helped us really start with a foundation of there's a fundamental level of trust, particularly for people who aren't comfortable speaking compliments. You mentioned earlier that you really like working with high performers. How do you tell someone is a high performer in the raw? Like, how did you meet with me? And I think my business was pretty small when we met. Not that it's much bigger now, but how do you get a sense of someone is going to be a high performer or has that potential?
Yeah. So first I'm going to comment on something you just said, which is you just minimized your business. Not that it's not that much bigger than it was then. But to that, I say, stop it. Some of the questions that I ask people is looking into the future. Where have they come from? What have they built? And where are they headed? And you always had very big goals. You achieved a great deal of those goals, even though you didn't recognize it. And I think that article that you posted in LinkedIn was very telling about how women tend to minimize their accomplishments or want to be 100% sure that they can do something before they'll step into it. Looking at somebody's goals and how motivated they are and what they've done and where they're going and what their plans are, that's when you can tell.
So I always felt like I've been very ambitious my whole life, mm-hmm. right? And how do you know if that's just pipe dreaming or will become reality for that person?
There's no specific point at which I know whether or not something's going to happen. There's a great book called The Talent Code, and Daniel Coyle talks about the fact that it's how much you actually take action and consistently and persistently practice. Is someone willing to engage and take the necessary actions? If they're sitting on the couch, they're not going to be coming to work with a coach anyway. One of my favorite expressions is knowledge does not equal transformation or change. Just knowing something doesn't mean you will change. So you can read all the self-help books in the world, and I call them shelf help, because you read them, they sit on the shelf. If you do nothing, nothing changes. When you begin to take small steps, you also rewire the neural pathways in your brain. So an athlete who practiced the same skill over and over and over until they get excellent at it. And then they go on to the next skill. And that's what a really successful or goal-oriented or motivated business owner will do, is they will continue working at and tweaking and figuring out what are the right things to work on versus the old habits that aren't serving them well. Some of that is mindset. I mean, a lot of what you and I have worked on is mindset. And some of it is the physical, actual behavioral changes that you make. So you gave up working in the business at one point with one of your clients, and it was life-changing for you. On the face of it, it looked like a small change, and yet it had a very big impact on what happened with you, your life, your business. It freed you up to really focus on the business.
I love this Under Armour ad where they show Michael Phelps and other great athletes practicing often in the dark. And Kobe Bryant and even Michael Jordan, they did the practice over and over and over again. And they did it at a greater rate and probably with more intensity and focus and adjustment than others. Whether they were physically born with the talent or not, they led to great success. Now, for me, my major problem was not doing the work, right?
Right.
Highly self-motivated, super. Saw the strategy. What I struggled with so much was my mindset, and I was stuck in these sad stories that hurt. Now, you had me do an exercise where I drew a line. And can you walk us through that exercise?
Yeah, I call it my story exercise. And by the way, just a comment about the athletes before I move on to the story exercise. We see, whether it's a successful business owner or a really successful athlete, we see the outcome of the hours and hours and weeks and months and years that when they get to being successful, we never see all of that backstory. And so we allow ourselves to think, well, they got there, you know, I'm not there yet. So that is truly a mindset. And it doesn't just come to people. The most successful people in the world have followed a process, have worked really hard to get to where they are. And it's really important to, along the way, as you achieve different milestones, to acknowledge that through gratitude and appreciation. Because we tend to just kind of dismiss it as, oh, well, I achieved that, right? Does that sound familiar?
So that's not just common to me.
No, that is not just common to you. It's common to most people. The story exercise, we all have limiting beliefs. Every single person has beliefs that hold them back. It generally revolves around a belief system of, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy, I'm not valuable enough. The fundamental underlying limiting belief is one of those things. When you are living from a limiting belief, and again, when I take people through this exercise, it's not about we're always in the limiting belief. It's just becoming aware of when they show up and get in your way. Those limiting beliefs generate certain thoughts. So I'll use myself as an example. When I started my coaching business, I had a long career in higher education publishing. I was an executive for many years. And when I started my coaching business, my coach, I had a coach at the time, who said, you need to get out and start speaking because you'll reach more people. And when people see what you do, they're more likely to come work with you. So I had a limiting belief around I'm not good enough to get out and speak. And even though I had spoken to CEOs of $2 billion companies, that was a script. I knew what I was doing when I was in publishing. Now I'm going out and speaking to groups and like, I'm not good enough. Why would anybody want to listen to me? So those were the things that I would think about. People would think I was stupid or they wouldn't think I had anything intelligent to say because intelligence is really important to me. And how I would feel was nervous or frustrated or scared. And how it impacted my actions is that I just wouldn't do it. This is all part of the story exercise that we go through. And the result was that I was limiting my ability to find more clients. My coach actually didn't take me through this exercise. I actually created it as a result of my work with him and a couple of books that I read. So that's what I call bottom of the line thinking, and we all go there sometimes. So moving to the top of the line, which is where you create an empowering belief, I thought about what results do I want? And I wanted a certain number of clients that I would be working with that I had a goal for. So that was the result. And working backwards from the result, I thought, well, what do I need to do in the next 30, 60, 90 days in order to achieve that result? There were three things I decided to go do. One was I read this book by Nick Morgan called Trust Me. And I also practiced what I was going to say with my younger son at the time. He was a teenager. And then I chose a group of people to speak in front of that were not my target audience, because what I realized in working with my coach, I was very attached to the outcome that if I spoke, I wanted people to come running up to me and saying what a great speaker I was, and they wanted to come work with me. That's not serving, that doesn't serve well. So I chose an audience. It was a group of administrative professionals who aren't my target audience. And it turns out that I ended up getting business out of it for one of their association meetings. It wasn't my intention. And I helped somebody during my talk. I did this exercise with somebody in the audience, and it was so transformational. She came up to me afterwards and she said, actually, from listening to somebody else, she said, "You just changed my life." And that was really motivating to me. That was the reason I was speaking, not to get business. And so I felt really good. It made me want to go get more business. And I created an empowering belief. The empowering belief was, I leave people feeling energized, hopeful, and seeing new opportunities for success. And so we all have a choice whether we want to stay in the limiting belief or whether we want to live from our empowering belief. And the empowering belief has got to be one that really lights you up. And it's not always easy to go from limiting belief to empowering belief. So having an anchor thought, for me at the time, I didn't have a lot of success. I hadn't done a lot of speaking that was really successful. So I just thought about something that made me happy, which is when my husband and I got married in Vegas by Elvis. So coming up with an anchor thought that will help you, if you think about it, it'll have you get that feeling of being empowered.
I was really stuck on these two stories. You know, my one story was that I wasn't smart, which, similar to you, intelligence is everything to me. And I also felt like I was unlikable. And why would anyone want to work with me when it does come down to people? And I had to really work on those two stories. And I think that once I broke free of them, it really changed a lot for me. It really was this lifetime of carrying this deep burden and flogging myself that was probably one of the most painful things, of like repeatedly telling myself I'm not smart, or God, no one likes you. Why would they ever want to work with you, over and over again? And to be free of that was so transformative for me.
Yeah. And look at the culture you've built. You've built an amazing culture in your organization. People love working. You do everything. You bend over, with the help of your executive team, you bend over backwards to create a very intentional culture, which most people in organizations don't consciously create. And you've done that. And that's pretty remarkable.
Well, thank you. You know, I have a hard time accepting compliments. So tell us how you came to be a coach. What did you do growing up? You know, what did you study? How did you end up? And how long have you been doing it? How long have you been an executive coach for?
Since 2008 is when I started. So growing up, I actually had, you know, I grew up in the time when women could be a teacher, a nurse, or a social worker, or get an MRS degree. Fortunately, I never was seeking the MRS degree. I really wanted to be independent. I've always had an independent streak.
Did your mother work?
Most of the time I was growing up, she was the secretary to the chief of police in the town I grew up. We always like to say my mother ran the police station. You know, she was in charge of the budgeting, and there were a lot of things that, you know, she oversaw. And so she worked most of the time that I was growing up. She was super, super supportive of whatever I wanted to do. Although the expectation was that my brother would go to a better school. And I ended up going to a state school and did just fine. So my undergraduate work was in recreational therapy. And I did that for a little while and didn't love it. I really wanted to study psychology, but to do anything with psychology, you really needed to get a PhD. And I wasn't all in for a PhD. Then I went to graduate school and I studied blind rehabilitation, where I help people with mobility training, blind people. I did that for about 6 months and realized it wasn't a fit. So fortuitously, my former sister-in-law, who was also Susan Katz once she married my brother, was in publishing, and she said, "You would probably really enjoy publishing sales." So I applied the first time. I got rejected. because this shows you this was in the 70s. The guy who did hire me, who didn't mean anything badly by this, later told me that I was too soft, meaning I didn't have a hard edge to me. You would never say that now in an interview. So I went and got a job working for a temporary help firm, finding new business for the temporary help firm. And then about a year and a half later, I went back, interviewed with him again, and he decided at that point, you know, it was a good time to hire me. There were very few women in publishing sales at the time. And that became almost a 30-year career. I worked my way up through. Sales was the feeding ground for all of the management and promotions and executive teams. And so I ended up working my way up.
All through the same company?
20 years with one company. I worked for Prentice Hall before they got bought by Pearson and left right around. We went through three acquisitions and I left around the time of the Pearson acquisition. And then I went to work. How I got to Baltimore was I went to work for a healthcare publisher, Walters Kluwer, Lippincott Williams and Wilkins.
Wait, you didn't grow up in Baltimore?
No. I was born in New York, raised in Connecticut, and moved to Baltimore in 1999.
Oh, I thought you were born and bred in Baltimore.
I came to Baltimore in 99 to be an executive level for a healthcare publisher. And in 2008, we were some of the first major layoffs that started happening in 08. And I actually kind of raised my hand and said I was kind of done with publishing at that point. I loved it. It was a great career. I learned so much. I ran profit and loss centers for most of my career in publishing after I got out of sales. And I led teams and I loved it. It was great. I decided that I wanted to be a coach, an executive coach. So at the time, my husband, who's always been extremely supportive, my current husband, he found this little article on a franchise called The Growth Coach. And that was my first entree into coaching.
Where did he find it?
Some magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine or something. So we ended up purchasing a franchise, which was actually good for the first few years because it gave me some structure, gave me a coach. But we kind of outgrew the franchise over a number of years. And so we left the franchise at a certain point and just started our own thing. So my husband's always been in the business. He's the back office financial stuff. He's my brains. Although going back to what you said, never attempt to coach your spouse. That's rule number one. Never coach your spouse. We have very clear guidelines on what we each do. So mine are all around being the face of the business. We thought we would both end up being coaches, and he's a teacher, not a coach. So I do the marketing and the business development and the coaching, and he does all of the back office stuff. And that works out really well.
So you've done that since the start of your business?
Yes. Well, it took us a little while to figure out we needed to. And I always tell married couples, really identify and define what you're each going to do, because otherwise you're going to be tripping all over yourselves. You should be doing that with employees too. If you're stepping into an employee's role, then you've got the wrong employee if you feel a need to do that. You shouldn't be doing that. Everybody should have their distinct roles. So that's how we got started. And most people, when they start a business, have some contacts. I pretty much didn't have any contacts in Baltimore. I had to build my entire network. And I'm good. Thankfully, I was always good at networking.
That sales background.
Yeah, the sales background was really good. The networking. I've always been a major networker. I used to just network nationally and globally, and this became more localized. So I just gradually networked my way around, started meeting people. And the way I built my business was finding as many ways as I could to help people, whether it was through making connections or giving a complimentary coaching session, or because whenever somebody talks to me, I can't help but coach. So if you sit down to have a cup of coffee with me, I'm going to always do a complimentary coaching session because I can't help myself. And that's how I built the business over time.
Did you have a big cushion when you started? What was it like financially? How much was it expensive to buy the franchise? Can you talk a little bit about the money aspects of it?
Yeah. So I had the good fortune to get a severance package. So I had income coming in, and the franchise, that particular franchise, wasn't that expensive at the time. It also, there are things that I learned from buying that in terms of, if you're going to buy a franchise or a business for that matter, have something that you can sell as you build it. You know, I bought more of a lifestyle business, and it's okay because I've had a wonderful, I love what I do and it's been wonderful. My advice to people is at least double the cushion that you think you need, because about 9 months, somewhere around 8-9 months, I really had some meltdowns around, will I make this work? Because it takes 3 to 5 years to build a business that will generate the kind of income that you want and that you need. And people think it's income replacement when you start a business. There is no such thing as income replacement unless you go to work for somebody who's going to pay you a salary.
Right.
So that was a big lesson learned for me. And somehow we made it through. We had savings that we tapped into. Thankfully, we've been able to rebuild those. But there were, I'd say the first 3 years or so were nail biters. And it doesn't help when you get into a fear-based mindset. That only makes it worse. I had a wonderful coach. He was actually the president of the organization. And he was great about helping me through all of that fear that I experienced. And I will tell you that everybody who starts a business goes through that, am I going to make it? Will I be successful? Will I have money to pay the bills? Will I reach my goals? That is a very, very common thought process for people who are starting their own business.
When you started your business, was your husband already retired?
Yes, he was retired from the fire service.
And how long had you been married before you started the business?
Oh, great question, because we were together for a long time. So I'm divorced. I have 2 kids with my first husband. I wasn't in a rush to remarry. So we met in 97. So we didn't get married until 05. And we started the business in 08, but we'd been together since 97. And we lived for a long time up until COVID, actually. We've lived in 2 states. So COVID's given us the chance to actually be together all the time, which is awesome.
What was the stress of the business, you know, the whole nail biter years, like on the marriage?
I can tell you how I felt.
Okay, tell us how you felt.
Yeah, awful. You know, when you're having nail biter years, it's awful. You know, I can look back now. In fact, one of the first things I said when we got into the COVID situation was, thank God I hadn't just started a business. Thank God it wasn't 2008. Because I don't know, you know, I probably would have started looking for a job at that point. You know, it would have been really, really difficult to build the business I built the business primarily through networking and speaking, and then ultimately through referrals. And I would have had a really hard time because all the networking pretty much got shut down. And now I have a network that I can tap back into. And so every day I reach out to 3 people a day just to stay in touch.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And set up calls and network that way. But the networking that I've known, you know, is other than some Zoom calls, is pretty much on hold as we knew it.
You send out a mail. You don't send out a mailer. You should probably switch to sending out a mailer too.
Yeah.
A monthly mailer.
Yeah.
I'll help you with that.
Okay. That's great. I would love that.
I don't even
know
what you want. You probably have enough business. You turn down a decent amount of business, I would assume now.
I don't turn down business. Have you ever thought about turning down business? I only turn down business that I don't want. There is some business that's bad business.
Yeah, there's clients that you just don't want.
Correct.
We did do that in our marketing company. We did an analysis after our first year of what does our ideal client look like. And those ideal clients not only needed our business, so it was much easier to sell to, but they were much easier to work with mm-hmm. than other clients that you had to convince or hustle harder. So the less we had to work to get our clients, the actual better they were overall as clients and the more value they saw in our work. So we definitely do an analysis of that. And in Nyla too, I think we started switching to really doing that, where it is causing us not just pain, but the most amount of work. And why? And is there something we can do to solve that? Or do we want that to continue, right? Is that part of the effort? Or what would this look like if it was easy?
That's a really important analysis. And it's hard to do that at the beginning because you're just taking all the business you can get. When you get to a point where you have enough business that
right.
sustaining you, it's really critical to do that.
Right. And I think I met you towards the end of the nail biter year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's akin to having a newborn or a colicky newborn is like starting a business. No one tells you how absolutely incredibly hard those first few years are and how much time it takes
mm-hmm.
and how hard it is emotionally as well, because you took this big risk and you deviated from the norm and now you're doing something and you're not sure it's going to pay off. It's easy to talk to us now, as you gave the example of people see the success now. Well, you know, we're calm, we're not in it. And then even people who are in it, they often, as you point out, don't tell the truth about how hard it is. Or you catch them on like a positive day where they're like, yeah, it's all great. It's totally worth it.
Well, there's the fake it till you make it. And I realized if I was going to continue growing my business, I had to fake it till I made it. and so you may internally be thinking, you know, life is not quite where I want it. And I'm going to think about what life looks like when it is where I want it.
Right.
Yeah.
I was so scared it would never get there, though. I mean, oh, I think yeah. I was really, really terrified that all this time and effort, and especially I did this when my kids were young, very little. And I was really scared that it wasn't ever going to get to the place where it's more fun. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, that was also in the beginning, as you alluded, it's you doing everything. And now I have a team and I get a lot of pleasure in working with others and in not being a solo effort. So I get a lot of energy in the fact that others are coming together and excited to do it. Not just that I don't have to do all the jobs, but that I get to be with others and we are working together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you is, it seems today that there are a lot of life coaches
mm-hmm.
coming out and more business coaches. And I don't know if that's because I've finally heard of this term, but is there more competition now than when you started your business?
Probably. I don't think it was as common. In fact, when I started, I was in a networking group and I was having lunch with this one guy about 3 weeks into my business who said to me, nobody will ever pay you to be a coach. He didn't mean it in the way it came out sounding. He just figured like nobody would hire a coach. And I just chose not to believe him at that point. There weren't probably as many. And I guess I just don't pay attention to the large numbers. There definitely are more people who have become life coaches, business coaches. And I do see a difference between a life coach and a business coach, at least in my mind. And some people are going to resonate like you did in working with me, because I'm very, let's get to the problem. It involves your life as well as your business. And then let's figure out the actions that you can take. You know, let's talk about what can you do, not what can't you do to move things along. So action and accountability is very important to me rather than just merely exploring things. So I think that people who want that will work with me, and people who want something different, and there's no right or wrong. I think the most important thing is to feel like you've got a connection with the person working with you, and the fact that you're seeking help, whoever you work with, is great.
What do you say is kind of your differentiator for working with you as a coach? Like, what would lead someone to pick different coaches? What should people look for when they're looking for a coach for themselves?
I think someone, just as a coach is going to talk with and interview in a sense, I say that in quotes, the person that they're working with, I think the person should be interviewing the coach to find out how they work together and what the expectations are. So I like people to come to their own conclusions. And I see myself as kind of coach consultant. It's a combination of both. I'm not afraid, after I've asked lots and lots of questions, because I think that's an important part of the coaching process. Even as a leader, you need to be a coach. And I'm also not afraid to give advice and very focused on moving things forward through action and accountability.
I want you to describe for us the difference between a mentor. So that man said, why would anyone pay you?
Right? Yeah.
And you wisely ignored him. Why would anyone pay you when they could essentially go to a mentor repeatedly?
I think there are aspects of mentor and coaching that cross over. And I have mentees that I work with. A mentor can be someone in your industry who's already gotten there to where you're trying to get to. And so they can help you navigate the waters in a particular area. A coach is someone who is paid and dedicated to helping you achieve the success that you want to achieve. I would say that a coach is also someone who should be pushing you out of your comfort zone, because staying comfortable doesn't cause growth. Getting uncomfortable causes growth. And I believe mentors are helping you navigate in a particular career, in a particular direction, they're not necessarily having this continuity of growth.
I particularly like that as a coach, I think you are very focused on my personal success mm-hmm. versus having a clear bias from where you are. So I think mentors, they often are telling you about what happened in the past. Mm-hmm. So they're good for historical knowledge. But I find that sometimes the world is so different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a parent trying to describe to their child what it was like pre-phones and pre-iPads, a life like that, where the business has fundamentally changed. I think that as a coach too, what I particularly liked was a sense of normalcy and patterns across all business leaders. And that's one thing I was really looking for too, is I wanted to ensure, particularly as a woman, and I had been told too many times in my career that I was too aggressive, right? I had this common thread that you're too aggressive, you're too much of a go-getter. And I really wanted to ensure that not just success of my company, but success beyond that, that I was growing in the right way. I didn't want to be sort of a tree with a weird bend because I was listening to a certain set of feedback. And what I really wanted was external advice that had been across multiple industries and really saw what is good positive behavior from any leader, whether it's a woman or a man, and whether my behavior was unique to me or my specific kind of industry and the perception. So before we wrap up, do you have a book that really impacted you?
One of the books that I loved that I read early on was by Jack Canfield. Jack actually used to be one of my authors. Many years ago, he wrote a book called 101 Ways to Enhance Self-Concept in the Classroom. And we met back when he was a hippie, long hair.
No, tell us, who is he? What is his most famous book?
Oh, Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he actually pitched his Chicken Soup for the Soul book to me back in 1980. I was one of the 140 publishers who turned him down. Rightfully, we were not the right publisher. He wouldn't have been successful with us.
Can you imagine that tenacity? 140. And he was already an author.
He was an educational author. He had been a teacher. This is a good part of the story, actually. This is really important for tenacity because 20 years later, I'm flying cross country and I'm sitting next to, it's right after 9/11, and I don't have a plastic knife, which they started using. And I go to borrow one from the guy sitting next to me. And I notice he's furiously working away on manuscript. So about an hour later, the flight attendant came over and said something, something, Mr. Canfield. And so I thought, So I turned to him. I said, are you Jack Canfield? I mean, he's extremely well known. And I introduced myself. I said, I don't know if you remember me. I was your publisher, you know, 20 years ago. And he did. And we had a great conversation. So I asked him, what was it that has made you so successful? And he said there were two things. One, he was using an educational publishing model by getting reviews on all the stories that he put into Chicken Soup. Anything that didn't read a 9 or 10 with the reviewers who reviewed the stories wouldn't go in the books. The second thing was, he said, I did three things every day to help promote the books. This was early on, you know, whether it was sending out copies, going on radio shows, but that consistency of three things every single day. And he built this empire of Chicken Soup for the Soul, and he has a whole coaching, and just the nicest human being in the world. I read his book. It's a long one. I read Success Principles when I started my coaching business. And that really helped me to stay in the right mindset. You know, I was going into those nail-biting, knuckle-bender, when I was having all that fear. That book was really instrumental. For people who are employed and are unhappy in their jobs, I wrote a book called Create Your Dream Job, which is available on Amazon.
What? I did not know you wrote a book.
Yes, I did.
My sister needs to read that book. I need to get that for my sister. Say the title again, please.
It's Create Your Dream Job, : Change Your Mindset, Change Your Life.
Wonderful.
And it's a very short, practical book. So for anybody out there who's not running a business and is in a job that they don't love, pick up the book, lots of practical exercises, and I completely forgot about it. I'm not good at self-promotion.
Well, Susan Katz not only is a executive coach, but also an author. Please tell us about your strategic planning trips in Aruba. So when we are a post-COVID world, please tell us about these trips.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll be more than once a year.
Back in 2010, my husband and I love Aruba. And we have 2 weeks of timeshare there. And we were on a snorkeling trip. And I had always been thinking how cool it would be to coach in Aruba. So I ran into somebody who was running yoga retreats, got introduced to the owner of this resort that we now use. And that was in June of 2010. And we kicked off our first coaching retreat to help people get focused for the upcoming year, a strategic planning retreat for the year. And we do a group for a week. And we are planning the last week of October in 2021. We're assuming that we'll be beyond COVID restrictions, that there'll be enough people that are vaccinated and that we'll all be able to travel. And we do a group of somewhere between 8 to 12 people who come together and think and plan and get refocused and enjoy Aruba at the same time. So it's a business opportunity to travel along with some time and vacation. It's awesome. We love it.
And I think it helps with also starting with the end in mind, which is what do you really want for your life?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why often business coaching is so tied to personal life, because for my husband and I, it is our primary source of income.
Mm-hmm.
And how hard we work or not work has a huge impact on our actual lives, because we are so intertwined and it is a huge source of also potential. So it's nice to say, like, what do we really want for our lives? Do I want to retire early? Do I want to keep working for the next 10 years? How hard? What's the pace? And I think being at a beach, which most people think of as the ideal, is a great way to start with, let's back up and see, are we busy in the wrong way or are we busy in the right way? And are we heading down this path that we actually want to?
You hit on a really important point, which is it's transformational. It's really important to pull out of your environment because your brain works differently when you're out of the day-to-day. And I can tell you for any number of people who've come on the retreat, I've got one business in particular. It was completely transformational. They ended up leaving one business and completely breaking away from a family and starting their own business. You know, they attribute the retreat in Aruba to doing all of that. And any number of other stories of people who've done transformational things as a result of getting out of the environment and letting their mind relax and beginning with the end in mind, which is one of the things I love doing with people. Think about the future. Where do you want to be?
Now, before we go, tell me something about yourself that might surprise us.
I did synchronized swimming all through high school and college. Most people don't know that about me. I was the Esther Williams of Manchester High School and University of Connecticut.
I want a photo. I didn't even know that that was available at that time. Did you go to an all-girls school?
No. I was in a big public high school and UConn had a team. I was actually captain or whatever they called it at the time in high school. I did it all through college as well.
Wow. Was it a competitive sport?
No, it was. We just performed.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I also want to thank you for being my coach and helping me achieve my dreams so far. I think my mother would be amazed to see that her daughter started a business named after her, no less,
mm-hmm.
and has two kids and a husband who works in the business. She would love that part too.
That's awesome. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about what I love so much. I also have appreciated very much the opportunity to work with you. You fall into my ideal client who is highly motivated and has dreams and is willing to change. And you will change the world through what you're doing, whether it's the people who work for you who get to experience a wonderful work environment, or the work that you do, because I know the work that you do has tremendous impact in the world. So I am grateful for you as a client as well.
And before we go, how can we reach you? So I'm sold. I need coaching. Everyone needs coaching.
Email me at Susan at SusanKatz, K-A-T-Z, advantage.com.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that you have a book. I can't wait to
check it out. I can't believe I never told you that.
Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. Please be sure to share it with friends and family. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn under the Outspoken Podcast. Thanks again, and chin up, heads up, eyes forward.